We are here in Genesis 2, and we're getting into Genesis 3, you see. This is our second week talking about work. We're in the midst of a series on creation and what it tells us about the world in which we live, that God created and invited us into to discover the meaning that he has for us. And we learned last week about the goodness and beauty of work. This is before the fall. This is before Adam and Eve have turned and rebelled against God, and sin and rebellion and brokenness has entered into the world, and we see that work is good, that it brings beauty into the world. And even then, we recognize that it is also broken and cursed and messed up, and we see that, and we'll spend a little bit more time on that this morning, that there is still a good and beautiful reality to work, and yet, because of the fall, it comes with thorns and thistles, with sweat and with pain. We see from the verses here in chapter 3 that describe work after the fall, right after the fall. This is part of the curse of Adam and Eve's rebellion, right? And so, we're going to look at a few different ways that work plays out for us in light of it being both good and beautiful and broken and cursed. And that's all the work that we experience. That could be our jobs or all of the other ways in which we work to bring rightness and goodness into the world or beauty into the world. Many of you know the story. 2 years ago, we had Stephanie, my wife, and Tina Alsma create the liturgical art for Easter. And I just want to encourage you to be here next week. We'll have new liturgical art. This is our Lenten art that Quincy Owens made, and it will come down, and we'll have Easter liturgical art. But that year, there was a great deal of work by many in the congregation to put together paper chains made up of strips from our old worship guides and a number of gold strips of paper as well. And on these three cables that we have up here and across the front, we had many, many paper chains laid. It just covered the place. And I've got pictures, and the pictures are great, but we talked about they don't do it justice. They don't do justice to the way that felt in here. And so we came, Stephanie, I, and Matt, and Tina, and on Thursday night before Easter, we installed it, and we were so excited for everybody to come and see it. And I came, I was the first one to show up that Sunday morning, and I'm walking along there, and I look through the windows, and I don't see it. And I come in, and it has all been torn down. And it has, it's been not only torn down, it's been smushed up and either thrown away already or put into bags. It couldn't be rehung, essentially. And so if you were here that Easter, you got a picture on your chair, right? That didn't do it justice. And the work that was put into that, the creativity and the time that not only Steph and Tina had put into it, but that many in the congregation had been a part of creating those rings, it felt pretty fruitless, right? It's still a bit painful to recount that. It's, you know, a couple of years later, my wife is nodding. It's still a bit painful to think about the reality of that brokenness and the work that was put into it, right? But we all have ways in which we've experienced work in that way. Again, it could be our job. It could be in parenting. It could be in the work that we do to create good and beauty in our homes or our neighborhood or the city. All kinds of ways in which our work is frustrated. And there, again, all kinds of ways in this plays out. I mean, maybe if we think about it in terms of our job, that it's we're looking for a job. We're without a job. We are underemployed. We have a bad boss or bad coworkers, or we're part of a messed up bad system. Maybe we're a student. And we have a bad, you know, we're going to complain about our bad teacher or fellow students who are causing trouble. There are all kinds of ways in which we experience work and we experience the frustration in the midst of it. And we could all tell stories. That's not what we're going to do, but we could all tell stories of that, right? But here's another reality is that maybe one of the ways that we experience the brokenness of work is maybe it's going so well that we assign ourselves value and worth because work is going really well. Because people praise us for the job that we do. And maybe we do a really good job, which is absolutely appropriate, but then we begin to trust in that and our own ability to do that work well. All this is to say that there's so many ways in which our work is broken, and which it is either fruitless or frustrated, that we are invited into thinking of what does it look like for us as followers of Jesus to allow all things to be done for him, to the glory of God, 1 Corinthians 10? Or how do we allow that whatever we do to let our work be done heartily as to the Lord and not for men? Colossians chapter 3. What does it look like for us to do that? There are going to be 4 points for the sermon this morning. And I mentioned these last week. These were categories that I got as I was studying these passages with the folks at Redeemer. As we're preaching through some of the same things, and they are, we create, we cultivate, we cure, and we curb. We create and cultivate, that's part of just the natural goodness and beauty of work, and yet we'll see that even those things are tainted by the fall and the brokenness, the curse. And then because of the curse, because of brokenness, because things aren't the way that they're supposed to be, and there's injustice and things that are wrong, pain and sweat and thorns and thistles, we cure and we curb. Let me pray as we take a look. Lord, open our hearts and minds to the truth of what it is to work to your glory as you created us to live and to work. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. The first thing that we're invited to do is to create. We've talked a good bit. We spent 3 weeks looking at the fact that we are created in the image of God. And there are multiple ways in which we image him. And we see the thing that he does in the very beginning, before that, is that he creates the world. He takes 6 days to create the world, to form it and to fill it. And then he rests on the seventh day. But as those who are created in his image, we are little creators. We are sub-creators. Now, we don't create in quite the same way. We talked about the fact that he creates from nothing. We take what he gave us and we form it into new ways, often with creativity, but we are his image bearers, and so we're invited to create. One of the things that I've loved about being at Redeemer and Fountain Square Press is the way in which I've been encouraged to value the arts, right? To have liturgical art each week that draws us into worship, to value the artists and what they bring to the table. God has never been a utilitarian God. We talked about that as we saw him creating the world and different kinds of plants, different kinds of animals. We look at creation, we see the variety. It is beautiful. It's not strictly utilitarian. We see it here in verse 9 of chapter 2, where he puts them in this garden, and out of the ground the Lord God made to spring up every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. It wasn't just every tree that gives nourishment so that Adam and Eve can live. It's beautiful and good to the sight. He's gratuitous in the way that he creates for you and for me, for the creatures that he put in this place. That's something that we can rejoice in. And he invites us to step into our image bearing in a way that we would ourselves create. We see as well, and we talked about this last week, that he puts them in this place where there are the different rivers flowing, and that within these different areas there's gold, and there's onyx, and there's bdellium, and there's a picture here of these resources being developed ultimately toward a city, toward a glorious city that we end up seeing in the end of Revelation. But to be clear, that's where things were headed even here. It wasn't just always to be a garden. It was to be developed, and the creatures were to use their creativity to build and develop God's world. And so we, still after the fall, we find that the curse continues to include. There is work to be done. There is work that we're invited to even after the curse. And so we create, and we are artists and entrepreneurs. We think about how to use what God has given us to make things new or better. And to even dream in the midst of that. All of this is a part of fulfilling what God has invited us into. And so if you are gifted in this way to think as an entrepreneur, to think as an artist, there's an invitation to dream and to pray and to try big things. And we could give examples of ways that folks have done that in here maybe you're a scientist, but you don't really want to be a scientist. You want to be a writer. And then you dream and you risk and you end up writing with Wayne Brady and for Stephen King and nobody in particular. That takes dreaming and stepping into our creativity, into recognizing that as image bearers, that this is something that we get to do. Now, to be clear, there's probably only one person in here who's going to end up writing for Stephen King, so this is not something that we're all pursuing, right? But there are lots of small ways in which we create. Creating a spreadsheet that makes life smoother for myself, or for, I'm not making spreadsheets, but I know that many people can, right? And they make life better for me. That's creativity that's actually for the good and the benefit of others. That's stepping into God's gifting for you to create things that make this world a better place. Creating systems, writing papers that help you learn and develop, that might be encouragement to others if you're a student. But we also continually talk about that God is so relational that we create friendships and we create culture. And this might happen in our jobs. This might happen in our homes. This might happen in our neighborhoods, that we're invited to create culture and relationships and community with one another in ways that are good and right and beautiful. We can think about teachers and their role of creating new and developed citizens of the world who are learners and growers who know how to operate and what it means to be human beings. It's a calling that teachers have. Keep going back to this idea of creature. We're all creatures. Josh was right about that. We're all creatures created by the Creator, and we can develop others, right? And all of this comes in light of us being created in the image of God, the ultimate Creator. And ultimately, the second person of the Trinity gives us this picture of what we're invited to step into. All of this is a part of something much bigger. We as creators are a part of something much bigger. Colossians 1, verses 15 and following give us this picture of Jesus as the Creator, the one who we follow. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. He's the second person of the Trinity. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things. And in him all things hold together. He goes on to say, and he's the head of the body, the church. He is the head of God's church. He's invited us in to experience this as part of his creation, the Creator, to be creators ourselves, to do it as his people. And we are able to rely upon him, to look to him, to trust in him as the ultimate and great Creator. Now, sometimes I don't think of myself as a particularly, the word that first comes to mind is not creative. It's not a creator. And we're all gifted differently. So I think it's one, helpful to think about the small ways in which we can create. And that's good and appropriate and right. But the second point is that we cultivate. There is a important calling that we all have to just cultivate what is before us. We think about the garden where Adam and Eve were placed, and they're invited to cultivate it. And sometimes that seems like very mundane, regular work. Just to keep the garden going, to grow food, is to dig rows and to plant seeds and to water and to wait. A lot of waiting, right? Some of those things can seem mundane. And yet that is a part of our invitation to work to the glory of God. And we do this in all of the areas of our lives. We cultivate what God has given, his creation. And we keep things from moving into chaos. This actually helps us avoid this temptation to think that the only ones who are really doing this well are the entrepreneurs and the artists. We should celebrate those things, absolutely. And we should dream and hope and pray. This is all God's work. Prayer should be a part of it. looking to him and the ways that this might play out. But we can also be confident in what he's called us to do in our particular gifting. And it might not be that position that is celebrated or known or public in those ways. And that's actually good for us to recognize. We don't have to be the best at everything. So that means we don't have to be the best in a particular category, in the better categories, the more celebrated categories. That's sometimes a temptation that we fall into. We compare ourselves. Well, I'm at my job, and this is often where we flow in our culture that is a meritocracy that compares and gives value according to role and often to your vocation, to your job, to the thing that you get paid to do, which is not really that helpful. To think that my value is defined in relationship to other people. So it's not one job better than another. The different parts of the body we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. We all have different roles to play. And particularly if we apply this to spiritual things, it's a good reminder that there aren't particular roles that are more holy or spiritual. The pastor, the missionary, is not more holy, is not more spiritual than the teacher or the astronomer or the writer or the graphic designer or whatever it may be. That we're all called into these different things that cultivate equally, that create with equal value the world that we've been called into. So that's a helpful just reminder that we don't compare according to our particular job or role. Or it's not helpful to. We do it all the time, actually. I do it myself. There's an encouragement not to do that here. But we also do it within our own, wherever we might happen to be, we think we've got to be the best at it, right? Just the very idea. It would be insulting to you if just in the midst of conversation after church, if I were to say, if I were to note that you were an average individual, or even worse, to note that your children may be below average. That would be a massive insult. Am I right? Yes, I'm right. But just to be clear, look around the room, and half of the people in here are below average. That's a good chunk, right? I mean, this is the way averages work, and we all think we've got to be at the top, right? That doesn't work out very well if we keep ourselves on that. It becomes a wheel, right? Just thinking and comparing. This is the reality of the world in which we live. It's very stark to me. I've been watching the second season of Full Swing. It's a Netflix show that covers different golfers, professional golfers. And there's some similarities to Drive to Survive, which is the show that covers Formula One drivers. And the thing that is fascinating is Formula One drivers, and I recognize that, live in Indianapolis, the home of the Indy 500, an IndyCar, and most people would say that F1, Formula One, is the pinnacle of driving, right? So just for the sake of my illustration, let's agree that that's the case. And so each year there are 20 drivers in the world that drive in Formula One. 20 drivers in the world. So the best 20 drivers in the world, right? And then you also have the coverage of these PGA golfers and LIV Tour golfers. And what is fascinating is when they cover an individual driver or golfer, they present failure as not winning more majors in golf or winning races or continuing to be one of those top 20 drivers. It's fascinating because I'm like, couldn't somebody just say, I'm one of the best in the world and I've gotten to have this career playing golf and making a lot of money, right? Or at least having a comfortable life and providing for my family. Or I got to be a Formula One driver for a few years, one of the best in the world, but to not continue to make it or not to continue to win tournaments or majors, the presentation is failure. This is just bizarre to me that we would put ourselves in this position. And again, we find ourselves in the place where only a very few people can claim to have not failed, right? Not a helpful way to think about it. Our invitation to create and cultivate invites us into celebrate where God has us in our particular places, doing what is often mundane work. That's good and right and beautiful. We think about Steve Jobs and Johnny Ives and other people created these iPhones, right? And I remember when they first came out and how excited people were about them and now how reliant we are upon them. And we celebrate those folks. But a few weeks ago, AT&T's network went down. And if I didn't have access to Wi-Fi, my great iPhone was pretty worthless at that point, right? And it turned out it was they called it internal company error that for hours shut down the AT&T network, right? And the reality is that that's just somebody doing what seems to be a pretty mundane job, keeping things going, right? And we need all kinds of folks doing the mundane work in order to allow this world to not, in our own lives, to not move into to chaos. And we're encouraged in the midst of this that, again, we're imaging God who himself sustains the world. He created it, but he also just keeps it going. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, this reference to Jesus as the second person of the Trinity. He is the radiance of the glory of God, the exact imprint of his nature. So it's reminding us that Jesus is the second person of the Trinity. He is God. And he upholds the universe by the word of his power. He upholds it. He cultivates it. He makes sure that it just keeps going. And we're invited to image him in the midst of that. So we think about the teacher who is creating these, helping create and form human beings that will step into the world. There is a sense in which, to start with, they have to cultivate, which sometimes we call classroom management. If you're a teacher, you're very familiar with this term, classroom management, right? It's inviting the kids into a space that is safe and orderly in order to be able to learn. And oftentimes, when I talk to teachers about classroom management, it's like their least favorite part of the job, right? You want the kids to just be able to obey so that you can then learn. But there is some sense in which for a lot of kids, just finding a place where they are cared for and where there is some level of order is a huge step in cultivating them as a human being. It starts with some very basic things. And we're all invited to think about what does it look like for us to image God as creators, as cultivators, whether it be in our job or in our families, in our neighborhood, in our city, how are we able to do that? Recognizing that even as we think about those things, we do it in the midst of this brokenness. We do it in the midst of things not working as they should. We do it in the midst of injustice and sin, both our sin, our rebellion against God, our choices to want to be in control. We're going to spend more time on the fall in a few weeks, but this curse that comes on work, that brings the thorns and the thistles, that brings the pain, that brings the sweat of the brow, was because Adam and Eve wanted to be in control. We want to be in control. And so we bring our own selfishness and sin into it. And then we butt up against other people's sin and selfishness and the ways in which they make mistakes. And so we are invited to seek cures, to image God as he brings ultimate cure. We image him in bringing that about ourselves, that we want to fix the results, or the effects of the thorns and the thistles in chapter 3, verse 18. We want to address the problems and the ways in which they're caused in all kinds of different ways. The garden has things that will destroy it, that whether it be disease that needs to be removed or whether it's animals who would come in and take away the plants, the fruits that would be grown there. We actually are, in some sense, we're on the side of Mr. McGregor. Peter is a rabbit. He's not real. We anthropomorphize, so that makes it confusing. But we're on the side of the farmer that would actually protect the crop, we would care for it to see it produce the food that is necessary for life, to see life move forward. And we're invited to think about ways to cure the brokenness in this world, to alleviate poverty, to bring justice into the world in all kinds of different ways, to heal disease, to repair things in all kinds of ways, to be a counselor and seek to bring healing and health relationally in the lives of others, and even in the ways in which we think. So we find this particularly an invitation to bring cures around relationships and reconciliation that we might have with one another. We're imaging God, who is the one who reconciled us to himself. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 18. This is the real need that results of the fall, the broken relationship that we have with our Creator, the broken relationship that we have with one another. He has reconciled us to him through the work of Christ. And then he, as a result, there in 2 Corinthians 5, gives us the ministry of reconciliation with one another, that we are invited to cure the brokenness that we have with one another. And we see a great deal of that in our fractured, polarized society right now. What would it look like for us to move toward reconciliation? What would it look like for us to move toward fixing the ways in which our relationships and our communities are broken? Just spending time with people. What would it look like for us to do that in our jobs? I mentioned last week how common it was in the jobs that I had valeting cars and the job that I had doing data entry in the years that I was looking for the next call, the next ministry job, how common it was for my coworkers to just complain, about all the curses of work, right? Of our particular job or our particular boss. And one of the ways that we can step into curing things is just to ourselves be a part of creating a community that's not complaining all the time, that seeks to find the good that is happening. Now, most of what we look at, and certainly big picture, we're not actually curing big picture things. So the last point is that we're often just invited to curb the brokenness and the injustice and the sin and the fact that things aren't the way that they're supposed to be. We think about all the ways in which our work isn't quite what we want it to be. We envision all the things that we could do, and you're never going to get it all done. You're just not. That's why oftentimes rest and the Sabbath rest that we talked about a few weeks ago is so hard to do, because there's always more work to do, right? And we think that we're going to... That we are responsible ourselves for everything. And we fail to recognize our need to just trust in God. And that sometimes means taking a break, going back too far. But here's the reality that we're invited to sit in our limits. That we can't cure it all, that we can't fix it all, that we can't do it all. But we then step into the ways in which we can just begin to curb, meaning we're focused in a small way, in a small picture. So I think about, I've mentioned teachers multiple times. You think about the IPS system, which we have been a part of. Our kids were in IPS schools, and Steph was on the board of a school for a while, for a number of years, and very involved there. And it is broken, right? But it's a part of even a much bigger broken educational system and the way that everything is funded. And we could talk about and lament, and rightly so, all the brokenness that exists in our education system today. And we have a great group of folks here, and we're not going to cure it. We're not going to fix that whole system. And so if we're called into those places where we might be able to have an impact in small places to curb some of that brokenness. And maybe it's in a school that is seeking to do it well, that has a better system. Maybe it's in a school even that doesn't have a great system, but within that school, a department or a classroom, or even with a few kids, we can begin to curb some of that brokenness just by being in relationship with a few kids and teaching a few kids, a handful of kids well. That is curbing the effects of the brokenness and the fall that we see all around us. But we are invited, wherever we are, and I've used teachers a lot, but we're in all kinds of places where we are invited to do all of these things and to see the effects of the fall curbed. We are still invited, even after the fall, verses 17, 18, and 19 to work. And there is, even now, after the fall, there is the glory of what God has called us to. The beauty of work that shines through. It comes, yes, in the midst of this mess, but we do continue it. So that we find Psalm 127, verse 1, encouraging, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. We look to the Lord. This is all a part of relationship with him. I mentioned Colossians 3, 1 Corinthians 10 at the beginning, that we do everything we do, we work to the glory of God. We do it for him and not for the validation of other people. We do it for his glory. And if we do that, if we seek to honor him, then we find the Lord building the house as we build. So it might be that we're actually building a house. Or we're cleaning our room. Or we're fixing a product. Or we're doing a school assignment. Or we're teaching our own kids or other kids. Or we're flying a plane. Or we're counseling a person. Or we're designing a project. Or we're driving a truck. But in all of this, we're loving God, and we're seeking to do this to his glory and for the benefit of this world that he created, that he's invited us into. So there's hope. There's hope in the midst of what we feel like is frustrating in our work. There's a promise that he's at work, and he's invited us into this project that he does to honor him and glorify him, and he does it by allowing us to do it in relationship with him. The God who is the creator of all things, that Colossians 1 passage that I read, he's given to the church, he's given to us to experience him together, reminding us that he has reconciled us to him. And that we do this out of that relationship. We do it within that relationship. And that gives us great hope. Let's pray.